Tēnā koutou, I tēnei, ahi ahi. Welcome to the panel, RNZ National. Wallace Chapman with you. Today, how would digital COVID vaccine passports work and what's stopping people from faking them? Something to think about when our borders eventually open. Professor Dave Parry with us. And this was front page of the New Zealand Herald today. Police accused of racism over tactical use of pain on Māori. People Against Prisons Aotearoa spokesperson Emily Rākete with us. And a large response to why don't New Zealanders use wool more and its sad decline as a product. Who knew? Well, apparently a lot of people did and didn't. And so we have Dr. Michelle Dickinson of NanoGirl Labs on what could be done with one of New Zealand's greatest products. I'm sure Phil will have a few ideas on that. With me today, joined shortly by Mihina Anamani Forbes, journalist, broadcaster and presenter for The Hui, coming in about a minute or so time. And in the studio now, Phil O'Reilly, global business leader and advocate and managing director of Iron Duke Partners. Phil, kia ora, welcome.
Thanks very much. It's fantastic to be here in Auckland. A bit sweaty today.
But yeah, that's humid. Auckland. Yeah. It's Auckland.
That's right.
You don't have that humidity in Wellington, do you?
No, that's true. We have a lot of beautiful weather in Wellington.
What do you have a lot of?
Not much wind. Actually, some lovely geysers. Some lovely inner-city geysers these days. It's fantastic.
Is Wellington a dying city, Phil?
No, it's fine. It's good. It could be a lot better, though. I think the idea that Wellington's lost a bit of momentum, I think that probably is right. But it's still a great place. I mean, I live in Tiaro, so within about a 10-minute walk of my house, there's 10 pubs.
Love it.
I mean, beat that, Auckland. Fantastic. It's good fun.
Well, there's the challenge, isn't it? With us, who maybe could answer that, is Robert Kelly with our story of the day. Kia ora, Robert.
Kia ora. Yeah, I mean, I've still got momentum.
You don't sound it.
Personally, I mean, I feel like I've still got some momentum, at least.
Of course you have. Course you have.
Inertia, potentially. I like living here. Yes. Weather report from here is that it's kind of grey and
gray.
A little bit autumnal, which is my favourite time.
And just joining us, Mihina Arangi Forbes. Kia ora, welcome.
Kia ora, tēnā koutou.
Lovely to have you on. Phil O'Reilly, have you met Phil? That's Phil.
Kia ora.
There you go. Yep. In Wellington here we have Robert, who's going to be telling us about... What are you going to be telling us about?
Right, does the phrase NFT mean anything to anyone?
Mihi?
No.
I could make it up, but I'd just be guessing.
Okay, so I didn't know either. It stands for non-fungible token, or maybe non-fungible token.
Mm-hmm.
Fungible means exchangeable, something that can be swapped for something of equivalent value, like a coin. If you give a dollar to someone, they give you a dollar back, that's fungible. A non-fungible token means that it's unique, and I realise that this all sounds completely weird, but they have become very big business in about the last 6 days. So
this is all very new.
Well, it's not new, but it's new that people are spending millions of dollars on it. So about this time last week, it started really picking up. So is everyone familiar with Bitcoin?
Well...
Yes.
Yes, well, of course we know what it is.
Yeah. Familiar. Well, I mean, I'm not convinced that I do. I've spent the last hour trying to work out what any of these things are.
Well, Phil, you'd have invested in Bitcoin.
No,
I'm sure you would have.
No, I've just got a cheque account.
You've got a cheque account.
No, that's not true. No, I don't invest in Bitcoin. Mainly because you can invest in it if you like, but I'd prefer to invest in a real company doing real things, actually. That's what I tend to do. Old-fashioned.
Me too.
So the value...
I feel like I've invested in my house a lot.
The house. We're Aucklanders here, Robert. The investment is our house.
It is no different here, I will say that. So... Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, Kitty, all of these different types of kind of blockchain currency. And the value of those currencies moves around. So Ethereum is one of these currencies, and they've decided to create NFTs as currency within their system. So you can buy or sell an NFT. And in this instance, an NFT can be anything. It can be a meme, it can be a GIF, it can be a short video of someone falling over. It can be music. It can be anything that is digitally created, and you can buy it.
It could be a Dutch tulip, sounds like it.
Well, that's a very astute observation. It is very similar. It's almost like tulip futures.
Okay. Robert, so the general idea of this is this. It's you don't buy a copy of something. You actually buy a one-off or unique
It's a very good question, Wallace. So, supposedly, you are buying the right to say that you own it.
Right.
However, I can go onto your NFT, which is a JPEG image, right-click on it, save it to my computer, and put it up on my wall.
Yes.
I don't have to give you anything to do that. You don't have any power over the dissemination of the image. But you do have the right to say that you're doing it. So this has been around for a while, but in the last few weeks it's completely exploded. An animated flying cat with a Pop-Tart body sold for $600,000 a few weeks ago. That was all done over last week when a 10-second animated video of what looks like Donald Trump collapsed on the ground sold for $6 million.
I'm still trying to get the concept a little bit. It's a bit like Bitcoin for me. It's quite hard to see the whole picture. But
who's going to buy it for $7 million? That's the question.
Yeah.
I mean, if you buy it for $6 million, who's going to buy it for seven?
What's
Why
the
would
worth?
You invest?
What yeah. Are, yeah. What are you getting for your investment?
What
I mean,
because
if you consider things like music tunes and that's kind of already accommodated for, you know, for example, myself, if I buy some music to put onto a production, I have to pay a production fee.
Ah.
So perhaps this is like the more accessible world instantly.
Yeah.
Rather than going through the process
Is that right, Robert? So, because there is an application to music here, eh? Because a lot of artists are not getting the money, but the NTFs, NFTs, are a way of actually getting money?
Yes, it might be.
Right.
It might be a way to do that. So some musicians, such as Kings of Leon, are releasing their music as an NFT in an effort to try and get paid for the production of music.
Good on them.
Interesting to see whether or not that works. It might work, or it might just be another way for people to rip music.
Yes.
Because there's no real security to any of this. And there's also, when you come back to your point, Mihi, about value. Like, the value of all of this is completely subjective. So if something, a lot of people are buying these in an effort to resell them. So there are a lot of people banking on the idea that like an art gallery or an art market, these things will start to gain value.
I see.
But it's also just as possible that consumers will just go, yeah, and forget about it, and value will plummet.
Yeah. Sounds like sort of pop art in that sense. So it's
right.
Well, it's pop art, but you don't get the art. So I'm not pretending to be an investment magnate by any stretch of the imagination. I, too, rely on a checking account. But I am fascinated by people thinking it's not quite Emperor's New Clothes. It's kind of Emperor's new imaginary email account.
Hmm.
You know, it's this assumption that there is value somewhere. And I wonder if people are just trying to find that value.
Creating a market, but an unanswered question for me would be which authorities do you go to challenge? Or, I mean, are we creating a whole market, a whole little chain?
There's no regulator.
That's right.
So that becomes really tricky.
Problem.
And that's been a huge issue for blockchain currencies in general. But anyone who's into them will be furious at me for saying that. But it's true. There's no one regulating this, and that's one of the reasons why the value of those currencies can peak and trough the way it does.
To be fair to, you know, artists already, there's meant to be you know, people who keep an eye on them. But if you consider Dawn Raids, you know, when some of their music was kind of ripped off by American movies. And forgive me if I'm getting it all wrong, but their ability to then go and challenge that was difficult because you're a tiny little company down here in New Zealand. And so maybe perhaps it's a smaller world.
Mm. So it could be a useful thing for that.
Very nice.
You can trademark an idea.
NFTs. You're a wonder, Robert. You pull out the most obscure things and just make them just so interesting for us.
Just as a parting shot, David Farrier published a really good piece over the weekend about this, where he spoke to an artist called Richard Parry, who has been selling NFTs as artworks for up to about $22,000 worth.
Good grief. All right. Just as an aside, I mean, you were talking about sort of getting licensing music. Here's a little footnote for you that just came to mind. So we did a documentary for TVNZ about 16 years ago, and it was about a flat in Dunedin who they painted their pink door. They were all dedicated to Pink Flat, Pink Floyd, and that type of thing. So we wanted to buy the theme to We Don't Need... Just
Good luck. How much money did you have?
30 seconds. Yeah. Just 30 seconds. In our great naivety, we emailed the lawyers saying, how much would it be for 20-second opening, thinking, could we afford, you know, because we had a grant, could we stretch to, say, $4,000 to get the really good, to get the, you know, ding, ding, ding.
I know the answer already.
And so we got the letter, we got the email and said, that's absolutely, that'll be around $15 million.
Yeah.
Holy.
I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, well, if you make a great tune, then you should. You deserve to be paid
good.
For
it's
it.
It's not that good.
Well, then you have to go and find another, or design, or come up with your own.
We did. We did a looky-likey sound.
It's good to know that this hasn't stayed with you for the last 15 years, though, Wallace.
At least it doesn't grate. At least you don't wake up at night.
We did
a
looky-likey. All right, Robert, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Time for I've Been Thinking. Hinarangi Forbes, you first.
Oh, me first.
Do you want to go, Phil, do you want to go first then? Because you had a ready form one, did you?
Yeah, I was thinking of the letter written last week to the Prime Minister from this open letter written by, I think, 5 company chairs, and actually they're chairs of quite a few companies between them. And it was a letter really calling for, as one of them said, an open source approach to what we do now with COVID. Not about the border or something, but about how we think about vaccine rollout and how we think about opening the economy and so on, and opening up our communities again. And I thought it was a very good letter. I think it reflected the senior business community people that I'm talking to. And it was a very constructive, sort of a positive sort of letter. What was interesting about it was the reaction from government, which was zero. Like, it just fell into a hole. No comment made. Was just read the hand stuff from government. And I thought, gee, that's just unhelpful. And what it really says to me is the government still very much thinks they're at the centre of everything COVID, when actually communities are and businesses are part of communities. And so the danger with this is the government kind of says, well, look, we're not going to deal with that. It's all ours. Well, okay, every time there's a level 3 lockdown at Auckland, it's all yours too, government. And every time we have a bit of a mess around the vaccine, there's no doubt there'll be some problems with rolling it out or some administrative hassle or something. And that's all yours, government, too. So I thought it was an unhelpful thing for the government to do with the business community to say, we're not even going to respond to this from senior people.
Just briefly. So you got Melinda Gates today saying to CNN that the two leaders that she admires the most, Angela Merkel and Jacinda Ardern, for their response to the pandemic.
Sure.
My question to you is, what more do you guys want?
Oh, well, Angela Merkel's reaching out to the business community in Germany quite a lot. So there's a difference between – but I don't think anybody's criticising the Prime Minister's response. What I think the business community's saying is we could do a lot better, particularly in this part of the pandemic, right, as we roll out vaccines, as we start thinking about how we open up the economy and
we can come back to some of that with Professor
Dave
Perry.
How can we think about doing that together?
Okay,
because
fair
enough. That's the team of 5 million.
Me, I've been thinking.
Just on that, I'm not sure that I think there's lots of community groups, iwi leaders and you know, people like that who are probably having the same response because we're in the middle of a crisis. So I'm not sure if it's the business community alone that's not getting to, you know, participate on moving forward. You know, my thoughts, because I'm a business owner as well as somebody who works, you know, for someone else. But, you know, I'm constantly being updated by the government on, you know, upgrading or reading things, or you know, and in terms of our actual response, businesses are at the helm of it, because businesses get to apply for the funding on behalf of workers and things like that. So there is some. I mean, I think there is some participation.
Maybe we can come back to that after 4. But thank you very much, Mihi Forbes and Phil O'Reilly, with me this afternoon on the panel. Stay with us.